Hello, sports fans. This is the Voice of America in Washington. I'm Douglas Impuga, sitting in for Sunny Young, who has the day off. Thanks for tuning in this evening, and welcome to another expanded 30-minute edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Stand up! Stand up!
Stand up! Stand up! Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports Show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Let's start with the Africa Cup of Nations in Equatorial Guinea. The tournament enters the quarterfinal stage this weekend with two matches on Saturday and two more on Sunday. So let's go straight to Johannesburg, South Africa, and join our African football guru, David Legg. David, we have the top eight teams now.
Yes, Douglas, and it looks like it's going to be very close at the quarterfinal stage in a tournament where we've already had 13 draws out of 24 matches. Let's look at them as they're going to happen. On Saturday in Bata, we've got a doubleheader, and the first match is between Congo and the Democratic Republic of Congo. A neighbourly clash, but there'll be no love lost between these two sides. They have met three times before at the Cup of Nations. The DR Congo won two of them, but most recently, Congo won. So it's pretty close. And also in terms of the rankings for this month, not much between these two sides. Congo-Brazzaville, definitely one of the success stories so far. In Group A, they won two of their matches, and they also held the host nation, Equatorial Guinea, to a draw. And they have an absolutely superb coach in Claude Leroy. He's a legend in his own lifetime, this man. French-born, but he spent most of his life in Africa. He has attempted eight times to get teams to the quarterfinals of the Cup of Nations, and he has succeeded on a staggering seven occasions. And he's done that with strong teams like Cameroon and not-so-strong teams like Congo-Brazzaville. If we just go backwards a little bit, Congo-Brazzaville were actually eliminated in the preliminary competition for 2015 by Rwanda. But because Rwanda fielded a player with a double identity, he had one name in Rwanda and another name in the Democratic Republic of Congo, they were disqualified, and Congo got back into the competition. And on that basis, they've done really well indeed. This one, Douglas, is difficult to call. I'm going to give a slight nod to Congo-Brazzaville. I guess it would be a real fairy tale if they were to progress. And DR Congo haven't particularly impressed me so far. Three matches, three draws, and their goalless draw with Cape Verde was undoubtedly the worst match of the tournament so far. I had the misfortune of having to report on that game. And at one stage, I was really concerned, what am I actually going to write about? There was so little happening. If we then move on to the second game of the Saturday doubleheader in Bata, and this is one to really look forward to. I'm envisaging a 35,000 capacity crowd in the Estadio de Bata to see the host nation, Equatorial Guinea, take on the 2004 champions, Tunisia. Now, Equatorial Guinea are one of only two countries, the other are Guinea-Conakry, who are in the last stage, who have never won the title. But for the second time, when they've been hosts or co-hosts, the Equatorial Guineans have made it to the last eight. And when you consider, Douglas, that they changed coaches with only 11 days to go to the start of the tournament, and also they were also eliminated in the preliminary competition but got back in when they replaced Morocco as the host nation. This is an amazing achievement. And we've also seen some players we never really heard about before emerging as stars. I'm thinking in particular of the young Equatorial Guinean goalkeeper, Felipe Ovono. He plays for a local club, Deportivo Mongomo. And if you'd mentioned Felipe Ovono to your average African football fan before this Cup of Nations, they would have nodded their head and said, who? Well, we all know about him now. He's been in superb form and goal. If this match was anywhere else except in Equatorial Guinea, you would certainly fancy the Tunisians. They did meet in the 2014 World Cup qualifiers, and the Tunisians won 3-1 at home and drew 1-1 away. But this Bata crowd have an amazing ability to lift the Equatoguineans. And for that reason alone, I'm going to say Tunisia to win, but don't rule out a surprise. If Equatorial Guinea do make it to the semifinals, it would not surprise me. Playing at home has this magnetic effect on so many teams. Then, Douglas, if we move on to Sunday, two more quarterfinals, and again, a doubleheader, this time in Malabo, and that's on the main island. Equatorial Guinea is a country composed of several islands and also a mainland. In the first match on Sunday, we've got Ghana against Guinea-Conakry, not to be confused with Equatorial Guinea. And Guinea-Conakry, of course, making the last eight in the most bizarre of circumstances, winning a drawing of lots with Mali after they finished with identical records. Same number of points, same goal difference, and same number of goals scored. Ghana have a distinct advantage over Guinea when it comes to Cup of Nations clashes. The countries have met five times. Ghana have won three, and the other two have been drawn. And if we update the form to very recently, the countries also met in the 2015 qualifiers, with Ghana winning 3-1 at home and drawing 1-1 away. Ghana, of course, staged a magnificent comeback in Group C. That was the one branded the Group of Death. They were on the verge of elimination with 20 minutes left of their match against South Africa. They were trailing 1-0, and they were bottom of the table. Lo and behold, they scored two goals through Boy and Ayew to win the match 2-1, and they leapfrogged from the bottom of the table to the top, pipping Algeria for first place on head-to-head records. This one could be close as well, because Guinea remind me of a boxer that often takes a lot of punches, but they don't fall on the canvas. And they did that against Mali. Mali definitely, in that 1-1 draw in midweek, had the upper hand over Guinea, particularly in the second half. And it seemed just a matter of time before they were going to win the match. But they just couldn't deliver that knockout blow. The Guineans are full of spirit. They've had a very difficult time, Douglas, in getting this far. Because of the deadly Ebola epidemic, they had to play their three home games in Casablanca in Morocco. But they still qualified, finishing above Uganda and Togo in second place, but below Ghana. Nevertheless, you have to make the Ghanaian Black Stars slight favorites in this game to maintain that very good record against Guinea. And then last, but certainly not least, Ivory Coast against Algeria. It does not get much bigger than this. Algeria ranked first in Africa and Ivory Coast third. And I've heard many a football commentator say to me today, this is the final before the final. And I certainly wouldn't argue with that point. There's a lot of points in favor of both sides. And it's interesting, the history between the two countries. Each side has beaten the other twice, and one match has been drawn. And both Ivorian victories came by 3-0. And one of the Algerian victories also came by 3-0. But the match we'll probably remember most in recent history between the sides was the 2010 quarterfinal, in which Ivory Coast were firm favorites. This was a team containing the likes of Didier Drogba, Kolo Touré, Yaya Touré, etc. And really, Algeria were not given much chance in the Angolan enclave of Cabinda. Ivory Coast seemed well on their way to the semifinals when they scored in the 89th minute. But back came Algeria to equalize in stoppage time, and then the Algerians went on to win 3-2 in extra time. This is really one to relish. I think, Douglas, if you had to pick out one of the quarterfinals that you wanted to attend more than any of the others, it would be this match in Malabo. Very, very difficult to call. I get a sense that the rub of the green is going with the Ivorians at the moment. And I'm going to make them the slightest, I stress slightest, of favorites to go through. So really sticking my neck out, I'm going for Congo-Brazzaville. I'm going for Tunisia. I'm going for Ghana. And I'm going for Ivory Coast. But if I can get three of those four right, I'll feel extremely proud.
That's very interesting. Now, at least now we know the eight quarterfinalists. Let's look back at the group standings, beginning with Group A, where we had Congo, Equatorial Guinea qualifying, and Gabon and Burkina Faso falling by the wayside.
Well, that's right, Douglas. And as you mentioned, Burkina Faso and Gabon falling by the wayside. Funnily enough, I didn't fancy the chances of Burkina Faso. A lot of people said they were the obvious favorites. But they based that, Douglas, on the fact that Burkina Faso had reached the final in 2013. And my viewpoint, and I've said it several times on the Sunny Side of Sport, is I felt that was a little bit of a flash in the pan. And I felt that perhaps the Burkinabe were a little bit underestimated in South Africa in 2013, and teams were not going to make the same mistake in 2015. However, if I got my call on Burkina Faso right, I got my call on Gabon wrong. I felt the fact that Gabon knew the Central African conditions so well would be a big factor. I also thought that their star striker, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, would be a bigger factor than he turned out to be. I didn't underestimate Equatorial Guinea. It's interesting that 29 of the 32 hosts or co-hosts of the Cup of Nations have reached the knockout stage. So it seems no matter how strong or medium or weak you are as a national team, playing at home has a huge advantage. So where my calculations went wrong is that Congo-Brazzaville emerged as group winners with 7 points, where I probably thought it would be Gabon and Equatorial Guinea who would go through. But it was the Congolese with 7 points, Equatorial Guinea with 5 points, Gabon really disappointing with 3 points. And I think their Portuguese coach, Jorge Costa, must now maybe be passing his CV around, because I wouldn't be surprised if the axe falls on him shortly. And then Burkina Faso, really disappointing. If you look, for example, at their star player in 2013, Jonathan Pitroipa, he did so well that he was voted the most valuable player of the tournament. He had a terrible time in Equatorial Guinea. Nothing went right for him. He couldn't convert several good chances, and he got repeatedly caught offside, particularly in the last match against Congo. And they finished with just 1 point, one draw, two losses. They only managed to score one goal in 270 minutes of action and conceded four. So a really bad tournament for the Burkina Faso. I was mentioning that Costa might find his job in jeopardy. And I guess, Douglas, it could well be the same for the Belgian Paul Putt of Burkina Faso. He's done well with them in the past, in 2013. And again in 2014, when they went to a playoff for a World Cup place against Algeria, and only lost on the away goals rule. As you know well, Douglas, football officials in Africa have got very short memories. And when they think of Paul Putt, they're going to think of a pretty disastrous Group A campaign.
Yes, David, moving on to Group B, former champion Zambia and upcoming star Cape Verde out of the way, and as Tunisia and DR Congo qualify. Interesting group, though.
Yes, Douglas. Here, I'm not surprised that Tunisia topped the group. I did stick my neck out some time before the competition began. To me, they were the obvious favourites. As you know, North African sides, very well organised. Tunisia may not always be easy on the eye, but they do get the results, and they withstood some onslaughts, particularly against Zambia in the match, in fact, the only match in the, on the group, which resulted in a victory for either side, Tunisia winning by 2-1. Now, in that game, Tunisia were on the ropes as the Zambians pushed forward, but they held on. Even though they fell behind, they leveled with 20 minutes left and then snatched a late winner. And I think the Tunisians have the capability, actually, to go a long way in this competition. What I was very unsure of, though, Douglas, right from the start of this tournament, was who are going to finish second. My heart said Cape Verde, this little country with only 500,000 people, an island archipelago off the west coast of Africa. I think it's very difficult not to support them. DR Congo, a side that's really are up and down in recent years, certainly a far cry from the side that won the title twice in 1968 and 1974. And then you've got a Zambian side. My gut feel was that they were better than 2013 when they went out in the first round, but they certainly were not as good as in 2012. I think the Zambian victory of 2012 was a one-off. It was a side that was embellished with pride, with spirit, and they were playing for their fallen heroes of 1993 when a Zambian plane that took off from the Gabonese capital Libreville crashed almost immediately into the sea, wiping out virtually the entire national team. And to the great credit of Zambia, its footballers, its officials, its coaches, and its people, they built a new side almost immediately and one that reached the 1994 Cup of Nations final before losing to Nigeria. But having succeeded in 2012, the Zambians clearly now were marked men. Other teams were treating them with a newfound respect. And if you, Douglas, as a proud son of Uganda, will well remember, it was Uganda who took Zambia to a shootout in a qualifier for 2013. That's how close it was for the Zambians. They scraped through in Kampala, but then went out in the first round without winning a single match. And sadly, exactly the same has happened in Equatorial Guinea. Two draws and a loss. And frankly, I saw all the Zambian games, and they did not really deserve to go through. DR Congo, I think on the basis that they were able to hold the Tunisians in their final game, perhaps deserved that place in the last eight. But the Tunisians, to me, the class act in Group B.
Moving on to Group C, the group lived up to its billing as the group of death.
Yes, indeed, Douglas, the now famous group of death. And the one interesting thing about this, whereas two of the other groups had five draws and another group had two draws, this one only had one. We saw a lot of victories and a lot of drama and some amazing comments from the South African coach Ephraim Sheikhs Mashaba, who even days after the elimination of a side with just 1 point out of a possible nine is still insisting that his side were the best in the group. Well, he's a better man than me. I watch those games, Douglas, and I still haven't quite worked that one out, because if I look at the table, I see Ghana and Algeria with 6 points each. I see Senegal with four, and I see South Africa with one. Now, the South African problem started at the back, in fact, at the very back, with their goalkeepers. Mashaba did something that I cannot remember any coach doing before. And that is, in three matches, he chose three different goalkeepers. He said it was a rotation policy, but I'm just not buying it. Don't understand it. You know, I've seen the giants of African football like Egypt, Nigeria, Ghana, Cameroon, Ivory Coast, etc., etc. I've never seen them do this. You choose your number one goalkeeper unless he's injured or unless he has an absolute howler. And then you bring in your second choice, and you leave him there as long as he's doing a good job. Sheikhs Mashaba, he's talented, he's a great motivator, but he's also a very stubborn man. And he clearly believes in this system of rotation. And no matter how much advice he gets to the contrary, he's not going to change his mind. Ghana, to their credit, they were suffered an early sucker punch in that they lost to a 93rd-minute goal against Senegal. They came back to score a 92nd-minute winner against Algeria, courtesy of that great finisher, Asamoah Gyan. And then in their last game, as mentioned earlier, they hung in there against South Africa. They were trailing for a long time, but then equalized, and then Andre Ayew, with a very brave header, 7 minutes from time, gave them a 2-1 victory. And that transformed Ghana from a team that looked like they were going out of the competition into table toppers. The Algerians had the distinction of scoring the most goals in the group stage. They managed to get five, four of their own, and an own goal by a South African. And they've looked at a quality side, and their quarterfinal with Ivory Coast is certainly something to look forward to. If South Africa were disappointing, so were Senegal. They were the bookmakers' joint favourites at 7-2 with Ivory Coast to win this competition. They came with a highly rated coach in Alain Giresse, the former France star of the 1980s. And yet, after a good start in which they pipped Ghana 2-1, they gradually went backwards. They couldn't beat South Africa. They had to settle for a 1-1 draw. And then they were well beaten by the Algerians. The 2-0 victory margin, a fair reflection. But nevertheless, a fascinating group. I didn't really, Douglas, have the courage before this group kicked off to name my 1, 2, 3, and 4. And I guess I expected South Africa in particular to do a little bit better. I didn't expect them to qualify, but I did think they would get more than 1 point. And they're going to have to go home now, risk indigestion by eating an awful lot of humble pie, and think again about their strategy, particularly this issue of the goalkeepers. I think you have to decide on the number one and stick with them.
Now, lastly, to the group that seemed to have never ended until today.
This is the group, as you said, that went on and on and on. And, you know, this was also a group of death. The interesting thing was, the minute the draw was made last November, the media from Algeria in the north to South Africa in the south, from Cape Verde in the west over there to Madagascar in the east, they were unanimous that Group 3 was the group of death. But I said all along, it is a group of death, but so is Group D. In fact, if you look at the rankings, Douglas, all four teams in Group D are among the top 10 in Africa, and that was not the case for Group C, where only three were in the top 10. South Africa are ranked 12th. So if you look at it from a ranking point of view, this was an even tougher group, and so it turned out. An amazing finish, as you hinted at, with that drawing of lots. And I think that's something CAF will have to definitely look at again. Anyway, what happened is after four 1-1 draws, it all came down to the final series of matches. And they were Ivory Coast against Cameroon and Mali against Guinea. And these were the proverbial finals because the sides knew that if they won their final game, they would go through to the quarterfinals. And that's what Cameroon did. A great goal from Max Alain Gradel after 35 minutes was enough to defeat Cameroon 1-0. And Cameroon, they depart from this tournament, and they must be really sick at the thought that in the qualifiers for Equatorial Guinea, they humiliated the Ivorians by 4-1. In the return match in Abidjan, they comfortably forced a 0-0 draw, despite the fact they played a lot of the game with 10 men. But then when it came to the real crunch, the vital game, unfortunately, Cameroon came up short, missed a few chances, and they are now on their way home. Now, the other match, which was also basically a sudden death playoff between Mali and Guinea, Guinea got an early lead through Kevin Constant. Then Seydou Keita, that great Malian footballer, a man making his seventh appearance at the Cup of Nations, he flopped a penalty. You or I would have hit that ball harder than he did. A very timid attempt, which was comfortably saved by the Guinean goalkeeper. However, Mali gradually got on top despite that setback. And I must give credit to the crowd because as soon as Keita missed that penalty, they just chanted, Seydou, Seydou, Seydou. Very encouraging. And I think a great tribute to one of the great modern-day African footballers. That Mali pressure finally paid off just after halftime when Maiga nodded a far post equalizer with his head. And as the game went on, you felt it was only a matter of time before Mali made the breakthrough, but it just never came. And what happened then is because the Malian and Guinean officials were in Mangomo on the mainland, the African Football Confederation, popularly known as CAF, they decided they needed the officials there at the drawing of lots so there could be absolutely no complaints or no claims of unfair play. So they waited until almost 24 hours later. It was in a plush hotel in Malabo on the island that the drawing of lots took place. The Malian official picked out a ball, and unfortunately inside that it said third, meaning third place. And the Guinean, of course, their official picked out a ball, and inside that it said second. Quite amazing, Douglas, after all those qualifying matches, six each, after a great group campaign by both sides, it all comes down to that, the drawing of two balls from a pot. There has to be a better solution than that.
Thanks, David. David Legg in Johannesburg, South Africa. Turning to athletics, Ethiopians dominated the recent Standard Chartered Marathon in Dubai. The energetic Andy Edwards was there and caught up with longtime Ethiopian running star Haile Gebrselassie. Here is Andy.
We're in conversation with one of the great ones of track and field, Haile Gebrselassie. We're in Dubai, and Haile has shown one of his many skills, that is as a co-commentator on TV. But we've been celebrating a tremendous running from the Ethiopians. Leminu Behanu Haile, not a very well-known Ethiopian, must be said, has broken through to win the men's title. And Aselefeh Mergia has come back from having a baby to win her third Dubai title. And Haile has watched them both. Let's take the men. Your namesake, Haile, Behanu Haile. Tremendous run from him to beat Lelisa De Sisser, who's really experienced, isn't it?
Yes, it is. What I was expecting, you know, around the 35, 37K, I thought, you know, just Lelisa is going to win, you know, the race. But what you see, you know, just from Haile, he was very strong. He looks very relaxed. And the kilometer 40, what I said, you know, this guy, you know, is going to win. Because, you know, just first, you know, just when you run a marathon here in Dubai, you don't need to be, you know, experienced athlete. Mostly, you know, just who won the race, who ran, you know, first marathon. Same thing what happened today. But the only thing, you know, just when we come to the tactic, you know, it was a bit tactic, you know. It's a very tactic race, you know, just especially the last 3-4 kilometers.
They finished okay outside the men's course record, but it was wonderful racing, wasn't it? I mean, for me, both this and the women's racing marathon, we saw runners giving everything, and it's the peak of athletics.
Exactly, especially when you run a marathon, nothing left, you know, just in your body. It's normal. Well, one thing what you don't complain at the end of the marathon, because of you run the marathon. It's a marathon. It's 42K. And if you ask everyone who finished the marathon, what is your regret? Nothing. Because of a marathon.
Let's come to the women's race. I mean, for a long time, we had an Ethiopian-born runner running for Bahrain, Tifis Tufa, out there in front. She'd won Shanghai last November. She ran 2:21 there. But she was running 2:19 pace and leading a really good field by 2 minutes. Did she go out too soon?
Exactly. Her mistake was, you know, just to start very soon, very early. Shouldn't be like that. She should stay, you know, with the group. Well, finally she paid the price. And you see the other, I mean, especially at the last part, you know, it's getting warmer. That's, you know, just hard, you know, just to push alone. You need somebody to assist. If you look, you know, just the group of women who running behind her, they were, you know, doing a right job with the pacemaker.
A fine win, though, and a third in Dubai for Aselefeh Mergia after having had a baby. She's a really quality athlete, isn't she?
Yes, she is. Today, I was, you know, just scaring a lot, you know, just during the race, because the Chirino, she's a very, I mean, a very fast runner. She ran, you know, good for half marathon, and but Merga, she used her experience. She knows, you know, just the Dubai course, and she's also a very, very strong fighter. And plus, you know, she ran in front of her husband, her little baby, just only, you know, just a year and something, and a year and a half. It's wonderful. And plus, you know, they are. Both, you know, the husband and wife, they are my friends, and I'm so happy. I'm so excited. You know.
One more question, Haile. You're looking as fit as ever. You're clearly a very busy man, the way you're in demand here in Dubai. Are you, I mean, if we say Haile Gebrselassie now, businessman, runner, is that the way to term you?
I'm doing a lot here in Dubai, you know, just things what I have done, you know, just since they start the marathon is a lot. But, you know, I wish, you know, just to run a marathon. Of course, now I'm switched to a business, and I'm doing a lot, you know, just in my business, over 1,600 people to work in the company. And, you know, I'm doing a farm, school, hotels, fitness center, cinema, a lot, and selling cars. Many small things make, you know, big business.
But do you still reserve some time to run each day?
Of course, every day, early morning, 5:30, I am in training.
That's the way we all should live our lives. Haile Gebrselassie, thank you very much for talking to us. Thanks very much, Haile.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andy. Andy Edwards in Dubai. And that wraps up another expanded edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Douglas Impuga. Sunny Young will be back next week. And that's the Sunny Side of Sports.